Hello and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie. I'm Marie Westhaver.
And I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about Omar Sharif, who is a movie star from Egypt, who was actually born Michel Dimitri Shaloub in Alexandria, Egypt. And his dad was a lumber merchant and his mother was a professional gambler, which is kind of an exciting thing to be able to say about your parents. Went to college, got a degree in math and physics, and then, you know, for a while, entered the family lumber business. Eventually became a star in Egyptian cinema, and then went on to make Hollywood movies like Genghis Khan and Lawrence of Arabia, Dr. Zhivago, and Funny Girl. So that's like the broad strokes of where he came from. I did want to mention that, you know, I tell you what his real name was, because when he met Peter O'Toole on the set of Lawrence of Arabia, O'Toole said to him, "Nobody's named Omar Sharif, that's not your name," and insisted on calling him Freddie for the rest of their lives. So Freddie or Michelle or Omar, where do you want to go with it, Mike?
Well, the only thing I would add, that's a really great biographical introduction for him. The only thing I would add to it is that he was of Lebanese Catholic descent. And the reason I add that is when you look at the wealthy family he came from, you look at his religious background, you look at, you know, his parents in various ways, there's nothing in there that would automatically tell you movie star in the making, right? It doesn't seem like that kind of background. Moreover, as Marie said, when he went to Cairo University, you know, he's studying math and physics, which, you know, are somewhat removed from filmmaking. But when he decides to go into acting, the thing that's striking is how quickly he succeeds. He makes his film debut in 1953. Now, a reminder, and when I taught a course on African cinema, and we watched a film from Egypt, and we talk about the Egyptian film industry. And the reason I share that is it actually, you know, has been a relatively large film industry, but known mostly within, you know, Arab countries. I mean, the films from a place like Egypt rarely would get outside those borders or you know, similar nations. So the long and short of it is people living in America, going to art house cinema, whatever, would not necessarily have known many films from that country. But within the country, he became a big deal pretty quickly. And one reason why he became such a big deal was his debut film in 1953 was called The Struggle in the Valley, which is actually a very famous Egyptian film. But for our purposes, what's significant there is his co-star, Fatin Hamama. She was a big movie star in Egypt at that time, and they appeared in it together. She had been an actor since she was a kid. In fact, she was referred to, people like cute, you know, nicknames. And so she had been known as Egypt's Shirley Temple. She had that title, if you will. But another title was she was also known as the Lady of the Arabic Screen. And so, you know, like within her own culture, she had this kind of tag designations that people just liked her so much. So when they actually met and worked together, they would then, not surprisingly, particularly in terms of film stars, get married. And they got married in 1955. And it was really upon marrying her, and she was Muslim. So here he is, a Lebanese Catholic. He's marrying her. Back to Marie's point, this is the point where he converts to Islam. And at that point, he changes his name to Omar Sharif. So you're absolutely right, Marie. I love the anecdote. Like, you know, who would have that name? Well, he didn't have it until he took it there. And then they continued to make movies together in the late 50s. Lady of the Palace, a film called River of Love, which is based on Tolstoy's Anna Karenina. Egyptian movies tend to have what we would call soap opera type plots. Very melodramatic in the acting style, the plot line, the music and so on. And when I use a film from Egypt in that course I referenced, the students liked it. And in fact, it's by Yusuf Shaheen, who's the most famous Egyptian director and has kind of a high art quality, I would say. But even there, there's a melodramatic element that some of the students, frankly, didn't care for. They thought, oh, it's too much like a soap opera. And it's a different language, if you will. And so that's the kind of cinema they were making. She would also make some English language movies like Cairo in 1963 with George Sanders. So, you know, she crossed over to international cinema just a little bit. They would divorce in 1974 and he'd have a subsequent actress wife. But in this early history, she's so significant in terms of how he becomes Omar Sharif. And having made these Egyptian films and done quite well, we should now proceed, I think, to Lawrence of Arabia. I'll hand it off to you again, Marie, but I'll point out very quickly, just because we all need to be grounded in this, how quickly he went, not just from Egyptian cinema to international cinema, but the fact that he was so well received as he did that. Lawrence of Arabia, the David Lean film, 1962, was Omar Sharif's first English language movie. And that's like, wow, what a way to start, what a bang, you know? And moreover, the only other thing I'll add to it before handing off is that he received an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor. So what a, you know, 1-2 punch of a big international hit, and he gets, you know, Academy Award recognition that way. So Marie, why don't you tell us a bit more about Lawrence of Arabia?
Well, interestingly, Omar Sharif makes it sound like his success in getting that role was complete luck, because he says they chose me for Lawrence of Arabia because I spoke English, had black hair, black eyes, and a mustache. It was all luck. I was taken in a plane to the desert to meet David. And as we came to land, we could see him sitting all by himself. We landed right next to him, but he didn't move one step. When I got off the plane, he didn't say hello. He simply walked around to see my profile. Finally, he said, "That's very good, Omar. Let's go to the makeup tent." I tried on a mustache and it was decided I would grow one. I've shaved it off for a couple of films, but otherwise I've had it ever since. So that was his entry into making this movie, which is the story of T.E. Lawrence, the English officer who successfully united and led the diverse, often warring Arab tribes during World War I in order to fight the Turks. And it was directed by David Lean and was nominated for just an incredible amount of Academy Awards, missing the nomination for Best Costume because they forgot to put in the paperwork. Very interesting movie to watch, because while you're watching it, you see like a really young Sir Alec Guinness, who was made up to resemble the real Faisal as closely as possible. And actually, when they were shooting in Jordan, several people who knew him mistook him for the real thing. So when you're watching it, to me, it has a, I mean, there's lots to say about it, but I did want to mention before I forget to, that I watched it again the other night, and it reminded me so much of Star Wars, partly because of Alec Guinness, but just the way it looks and it's and is shot. And doing some background reading, I found out that the director was just obsessed with The Searchers and watched it over and over before he started to film this movie. So it probably borrows heavily from both looks for this movie, but there's lots of really interesting things about it. All of the movement in the movie goes from left to right, which was deliberate to emphasize that time was passing and this was a journey. And in order to film Omar Sharif's entrance through a mirage, Freddie Young used a special 482 millimeter lens from Panavision. Panavision still has this lens, and it is known among cinematographers as the David Lean lens. It was created specifically for this shot and has not been used since. So what would you like to say about Lawrence of Arabia, Mike?
When you mention his entrance, not only into English language filmmaking, but specifically into Lawrence of Arabia, you very well describe literally his entrance in the film. I mean, David Lean makes use of the width of the screen. I mean, so you can have a speck on the horizon, you know, in fact, you know, it's a character on a camel and then, you know, coming towards us through a mirage that way. And the film is full of those panoramic shots. As you know, it's one of the most famous films in terms of the cinematography. And I would wager that Omar Sharif makes one of the all-time great entrances, you know, of a character coming into the film there. Boy, you're just primed for that character to walk in. And it's interesting that you mentioned the connection between David Lean and John Ford. Who hasn't been influenced by John Ford if you're a film director, specifically with The Searchers? But when you watch The Searchers, the way in which John Ford will frame scenes out in Monument Valley, and when John Wayne in particular, or other characters, make an entrance, how carefully calibrated it is. And oftentimes, holding the camera stationary, just keeping it there, you've got a vast landscape, have the character in the distance ride towards the camera eye. And in terms of the lenses that they use, you know, the viewer has a lot to take in, so you can make out some detail in the distance and you see that character getting larger. And so as you watch a film like Lawrence of Arabia, you realize how the director's working in a vast landscape, a vast space, and placing the characters there. That's one reason why your earlier anecdote that you shared in terms of David Lean, like physically walking around Omar Sharif, well, let's see, you know, how dark is your hair? You know, what about the mustache, this and that? He's really thinking, it almost goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, that he's thinking visually, right? He's thinking about, you know, that physical presence, that visual image. And that doesn't take away anything from Omar Sharif's acting talent, but simply there's the physicality of it. You know, not just a handsome actor, but strikingly handsome in a way that's going to photograph well. and can hold its own against that vast landscape. Not all actors could do that. Some will get lost in the sand, if you will, lost in the mirage. But, you know, you have someone like Omar Sharif and you're going to see him, you're going to notice him. Likewise, even more so, I would argue, would be someone like Peter O'Toole. I mean, when you have these chiseled features, really handsome, very different physical presence, but by the same token, someone who can hold the space, as an actor might say. And so when you get Peter O'Toole and Omar Sharif in the same scene, at whatever distance, they really hold their own.
Also, it feels like there's really good chemistry between O'Toole and Omar Sharif in this movie. And you make a good point, Mike, that Omar Sharif makes a nice contrast to the blonde, blue-eyed Peter O'Toole. Then apparently they got on famously and had all kinds of, you know, did all kinds of crazy things. So Peter O'Toole on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno talked about how he was afraid of falling off this camel during a riding scene. So he and Omar Sharif decided to get absolutely hammered and then tied themselves down on the camels before shooting. By his own admission, he was so drunk that he had no idea where he was or what he was doing for the entire scene. And this is on the attack at Aqaba, if you want to look that up. They also took forever to make this film. But as production was winding down in Jordan, Omar Sharif and Peter O'Toole wanted to prepare themselves for their return to civilization. So having heard about the sudden popularity of the twist dance craze that somebody had, you know, they found it in a magazine, somebody had shipped to the desert compound. So they flew in a teacher from Paris to give them lessons in the evening after the day's filming was completed. And the production dragged on for so long that by the time they were back in England, the twist went out of fashion. How do you like those odds, Mike? I mean, but at least they were hip for a few minutes.
Well, one thing interesting is that Omar Sharif and Peter O'Toole are of a generation that I would characterize as having what I call bad boy behavior. In other words, you know, Richard Burton, a whole generation of actors, not that actors haven't misbehaved before and since, but for, you know, or the Rat Pack actors in Hollywood, right? I mean, you really get a sense of how however much fun they're having on the screen, there's even more fun off the screen. And most of it's just usually, you know, let's get drunk, let's have a night on the town. But it seems like every night was a night on the town. And that actually may have adversely affected some careers in a way. And we can talk about that. One of the things that happened with Lawrence of Arabia, because it's such a huge hit, what happens, of course, is Omar Sharif goes from being known only within the Egyptian film industry to being known to everybody. He becomes a kind of, you know, matinee idol figure, actually, because of the, you know, the handsome appearance and just the way the film itself. And that's a film that really holds up well. You know, it's not just a matter of having, you know, pretty pictures, you know, whether of actors or of the landscape. As filmmaking, it's really exquisite. And it's been very influential for later films like Star Wars and so on, as you mentioned. But this is where Omar Sharif's career is heading into high gear, but already some signs that, you know, there might be some trouble ahead. And by that, I mean, he becomes an international film star. And when you make big international pictures, some of them are Academy Award caliber and they're winning festival prizes and all. Some of the others are out in the marketplace. And I make this division in a way that the film industry does. Let's say you have a film at the Cannes Film Festival. It might be a film in competition, and those are the ones we talk about as film professors and the people remember, but there's also the marketplace. And that's where it's a little bit of everything. So as we talk about his later career, there are several great films ahead. I don't want to cut him short whatsoever. The career's on an ascendant right now. But even along the way there, there's some others where you think, well, okay, it was commercially successful with the film. Otherwise, it's nothing you'd remember or want to watch again. And what we'll start to do as we go along here is Omar Sharif has played just about everything. When you talk about famous historical figures and this and that, and it's like, what? Connect the dots, or how would you connect the dots? You know, what has these things in common? A lot of it is just simply at the level of what are called deal making. If you have international films, they're going to be in a marketplace like him. They say, well, let's get Omar Sharif and let's get this actor and that one. You know, it's, well, she doesn't speak English. Not a problem. You know, we'll dub or whatever. And you know, that kind of a film, because they're thinking about the international marketplace. Who's big here? Who's big there? And we'll put them all together in the movie. It's a package, right? And not that his nightlife adversely affects that and his gambling as well, but at some level, it's the jet set, right? It's kind of living that lifestyle as an actor, and you take the paychecks and you make some movies because you know aesthetically they're going to be good, others because, hey, it's a big budget and I get my check and I can gamble it away the next night and so on. Let me give an example of that. When he does Lawrence of Arabia in 1962, one of his films right after that is The Fall of the Roman Empire in 1964. Big budget, sword and sandals, epic, this and that. Not good as a film, but so what? It was a commercial success and you know, got him a paycheck and this and that. In that film, he plays an Armenian king. And what I'm getting at here is, and this is, it's venturing into sensitive territory in the sense that if you're an actor of a distinct ethnic extraction, you know, whether we say actor of color or ethnic extraction, and we could have a whole show just about this, but you sometimes get called on not only to play what you are, what you're from, but anything near it or anything they think you could pass as. So, you know, exotic, basically, an example of Orientalism, if you will, but stretching far beyond the Orient. I mean, so, and this is a case where, well, okay, he played an Arab warrior in Lawrence of Arabia, so he's perfect to play an Armenian king. And, it, you know, it's really kind of funny in a way when you actually then look at the full career. It's like, well, what do these characters have in common? Well, maybe they have darker skin or something, or they seem ethnic, put a mustache on them and dark hair and a pronounced accent, and he becomes that. Marie, do you have that same feeling about Sharif in terms of what'll happen in the years ahead?
Yes, and it's a very good point that you make, because it's like they keep coming back to him as an option for when you would think there would be other people they could use. I do want to let people know who haven't seen Lawrence of Arabia or forgot that it is a very long movie, but right about the 2-hour mark, it does have an intermission. So you can break it into two pieces. I wanted to mention that when Omar Sharif signed on with producer Sam Spiegel to do Lawrence of Arabia, it was a 7-picture deal. The others were Behold a Pale Horse, Dr. Zhivago, Genghis Khan, The Night of the Generals, Funny Girl, and McKenna's Gold. And I want to go next to Dr. Zhivago, Mike, because I want to ask you too what your first sighting was of Omar Sharif. And I have to admit, it actually wasn't Dr. Zhivago, although that's the first movie I saw of his. It was his column in the newspaper where he gave bridge tips. And I just remember the name jumping out at me thinking, that's just such a distinctive name. That sounds like that movie star can't be, but turns out it actually was. So, you know, I was noticing the fact that he was a world-renowned bridge player, but, you know, as a child, you don't understand that people have more than one life. They're not just actors. Maybe they have other interests. And I think it's interesting that he plays bridge given that his mother was a professional gambler. But the first movie I saw was Dr. Zhivago. What about you?
In my case, just to quickly follow up on what you said about bridge, which is not my game, but you know, it was certainly his. He was a lifelong gambler, and when it came to bridge, he really was an expert. And late in his life, he published a book, 1983, called Omar Sharif's Life in Bridge. I haven't read it. It's not high in my list, actually. I don't know you know, how much about bridge, and don't particularly, I'm not bad-mouthing bridge as a game. It's just not my game, right? But it was his. He was very serious about that. And he probably could have made a career just doing that. I mean, I think, you know, you could make a lot of money as well as lose a lot of money at the gambling. But to follow up on one other strand of things that we've been talking about, in terms of playing such a range of exotic roles, Sam Spiegel has a lot to do with that. You're right. It's a package deal there of films to make, and these are films being offered to him. I mentioned already how in Fall of the Roman Empire, he plays an Armenian king. In that same time period, in Behold a Pale Horse, which you mentioned, Marie, from 1964, in that film, he plays a priest during the Spanish Civil War. So he goes from being an Arab sheik in Lawrence of Arabia to an Armenian king in Fall of the Roman Empire, now a priest in the Spanish Civil War. And then the year after that, 1965, the same year as Dr. Zhivago, he plays the title role in Genghis Khan. I mean, talk about an ethnic range. If you need an ethnic whatever, we got the actor for you.
Get Omar Sharif.
Exactly. So now in Dr. Zhivago, which is a really strong film, there, of course, he does play the title role. And so, you know, again, by way of ethnicity, and following up on yet another strand, Marie, of what you were talking about and asking me about, I actually did see Lawrence of Arabia about the time it came out or a little bit after, and certainly Dr. Zhivago. So those are films I would have seen either first run or not long thereafter. So I knew him actually. The first film I saw of his was Lawrence of Arabia. I remember that. And I can remember from when I was a kid, specific images, because it has such powerful visuals, right? As from a kid, I remember those things. So I had an awareness of him. And honestly, I did know some of the big budget kind of trashy, or at least commercial, highly commercial films. Because, you know, I was watching a lot of movies and I would see them. And even then I had enough critical discernment to realize some of them weren't particularly good films. And, you know, but I recognized him as an actor. So I wouldn't say that I was a fan, quote unquote, but I certainly recognized him and knew him as an actor. And then, Marie, let me hand it off to you again, because there's so much to say about Dr. Zhivago. And it really is, you know, he's got several signature roles. I mean, obviously, Lawrence of Arabia and Dr. Zhivago being the other one. So let me hand it off to you, because I know you have a lot to say about this film.
Well, Dr. Zhivago is about the life of a Russian physician and poet who, although married to somebody else, falls in love with a political activist wife and experiences hardship during World War I and then the October Revolution. Now, I think this is probably Omar Sharif's best known movie because it had this immediate life when new technology would come out, when things came out on videotape, when things came out on Laserdisc. One of the titles that kept coming up was always Dr. Zhivago. So it really got out there and a lot of people saw it. And people will still talk to this day about, you know, I'll never forget watching it, how cold you feel the entire time watching it because there's just so much snow. They did not show this movie in Russia until 1994. It received 10 Academy Award nominations, including Best Picture and Director, and won 5 of those awards. After Gone with the Wind was the second most profitable movie in MGM's history. And the costumes inspired the Zhivago look for designers Yves Saint Laurent and Christian Dior. Fur trim, silk braiding, and boots came back into fashion. Beards and mustaches also came into style, just in time for the counterculture revolution of the late 1960s.
Well, what's interesting, when you mention Academy Award nominations, it's really curious and kind of hard to explain, but of all the nominations that Dr. Zhivago garnered, Omar Sharif was not nominated for Best Actor there. And then looking down the list, the winner actually was Lee Marvin for Cat Ballou. So it's kind of hard to explain how, you know, he did get so much recognition for such an iconic role, but somehow there was not even an Oscar nomination there. But I'll also very quickly add that by way of what this film meant for his career, he had already been launched. I mean, it was Lawrence of Arabia that really launched the international career, but also another actor who had been coming along from a very different background, but his co-star in Zhivago, Julie Christie. This is one of the films that really put her forward as an international film star. And there's something to be said here about the kind of chemistry between these two characters. I mean, they really interact beautifully on screen. And people who have seen Zhivago, and in many cases saw it back in the mid-60s, right? People who've seen Dr. Zhivago tend to have not just memories of it, but as Maria alluded to, really fond memories in a way like, oh my goodness, and they'll start gushing about a particular scene or just how effective the coldness of the picture was, if you will. But it has that quality to it. And it's there in the imagery, in the acting, in the music. It's really a very lush kind of thing. And of course, you have great source material. I mean, you have a Nobel Prize winner as the, you know, Boris Pasternak as the author of the initial story. And so that doesn't hurt to have a good, strong story there. But I think, frankly, there what carries people is just that romantic aura. Maybe you want to say a little bit more about this, because not all films have that or have it forever. Sometimes you watch an old movie and somehow it just falls flat now. But this one is every bit as lush and romantic now, I think, as when it first came out.
You know, it might even be more so because it has that tinge of nostalgia. And of course, the sumptuous costuming and stuff like that, which is part of what people like to watch movies for. So it probably would even resonate better. And then, you know, in terms of being that romantic lead, you know, he would go on to make Funny Girl with Barbra Streisand in 1968. And I also wanted to mention The 13th Warrior in 1999, which is a Beowulf story. And he's got a role in it. It's actually an Antonio Banderas movie, which I think is actually really underrated. I think it's got a lot going for it in terms of the way it's done. And I absolutely want to make sure to mention Monsieur Ibrahim from 2003, where he plays a Turkish shop owner who befriends a Jewish boy in his mid-teens. And it's a coming-of-age story, and it's absolutely delightful. It's wonderful to see Omar Sharif play such a strong and likable and warm character and an older man. He's not Turkish, of course, and couldn't speak Turkish in the movie. So some of the words were made up and not a part of the Turkish language at all. They also had to shoot the film on school holidays because in France, there was a law prohibiting children to work on a film during the school term. So even then, filming is not allowed to take up entire holidays. So they had to take breaks during filming, shooting during various holidays in France. But, you know, I think we're going to run out of time in about 5 minutes, Mike. So how about some final thoughts about Omar Sharif and any of the movies I either glanced over or didn't mention at all that you would want people to know about?
Again, he continues to play a bit of everything on screen. We should talk for a moment more about Funny Girl and then they would be in Funny Lady because, you know, there acting with Barbra Streisand, he actually got into some trouble, quote unquote, with Egyptian authorities, because, you know, here he is, you know, as a Muslim, and he's acting with a Jewish actress and yada, yada. And, you know, that ruffled some feathers that way. But speaking of that kind of mixture of Muslim and Jewish culture, even though it's a mixed bag of later films, they even played Che Guevara in a bad film later on. But in Monsieur Ibrahim from 2003, I think that's the best of his later film roles. And speaking of religions meeting on screen, he plays a Muslim grocer who befriends a Jewish teenager. And that's a case, like in the Funny Girl, Funny Lady films, there are religions mixing, if you will, but, you know, there's a showbiz story that carries you, right? But in Monsieur Ibrahim, the whole story is about that interaction of religious cultures, if you will. And I think it's a nice small film, you know what I mean? It's not one of those big box office things, whatever. And that's why it's a good film, actually. And it gives him a chance to really act. He's not just playing some character with all the sumptuous costumes and big budget effects around him. He's really acting in a small scale story. And as a Muslim, he gets to overtly play that, the Muslim grocer, and really interact with the Jewish teenager. And the film did quite well, actually, on what I call the art house circuit. So it got him some late in career recognition that way, which I think means a lot. The fact that, you know, he was under the right circumstances, in the right role, a really good actor. And a lot of the commercial stuff otherwise kind of came and went, right? But you know, he had a good long career and ended it, or almost, nearly ended it, on that grace note of Monsieur Ibrahim in 2003.
So if you've only seen him in Dr. Zhivago or something from his early career, take a look at that movie, because it's a nice, like, return to an old familiar friend. And he still looks great as an older man. The last quote I have from him that I'd like to leave you thinking about is him saying, "I'd rather be playing bridge than making a bad movie." So fortunately, he got to do both. But he also made, of course, some wonderful gems. So that's it for our episode today. Don't forget to check out our other episodes at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And we will see you at the movies.
See you then.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.